されるのかもしれません。
In Muzaffer Efendi's book, Irshad, there's a beautiful story. Those stories are very cute, but at the same time, really you should read those stories as the interpretation of certain verses in the Quran. So this is about a man at the time of Moses. I'm going to ask the kids first. Would you like to know the language of the animals?
Yeah.
All right. Everybody wants to know the language of the animals? Okay. You're not the first one. At the time of Moses, there was a man who really wanted to know the language of the animals. So he knew that Moses, peace and blessings be upon him, he used to go to Mount Sinai and spoke to God. And then he caught him and said that, "This is really my wish. Would you please ask God if he would grant my wish, if he would give me the ability to learn and understand animals' language?" And Moses, peace and blessings be upon him, scorned him. "And you should first learn the language of human beings. You should learn how to listen first and how to communicate with others." But he insisted. And then when he walked up to Mount Sinai, when he spoke to God, at one moment he was not really going to present this case to God, but Allah Ta'ala said, "I granted his wish. Tell him that from this point on he will be able to understand animals' language." So Moses went back, spoke to this man, told him that your wish is granted, but be very careful. Be very careful. And then the next morning, the man is a farmer. So the farmer is going to his barn to start his day. And in the barn, there's an ox and a donkey. An ox and a donkey are talking to each other. There's a conversation going on. And all of a sudden, he realizes that he understands what they're talking about. And the conversation is about ox complaining about human beings. He said that, "How much I suffered from the hands of the human beings. I mean, they had been driving me to the fields in the winter, driving in the summer, driving me to the village in the winter. They're not even feeding me. Now I'm getting old. Soon I'm going to be old, and they're going to send me to the butcher. They're going to skin me. They're going to use my skin to make shoes. They're going to use my horns to make shields. And then eventually I'm going to be a roast beef." And he's sincerely complaining about human beings. Ungrateful human beings. The donkey is smart. He said that, "Well, you're suffering, my friend ox. You're suffering because you're stupid. Why don't you pretend you're sick? You don't have to go to the field every day. Now the next morning, the man is going to come, and then you're going to sit there. He's going to push you, kick you, don't move. And after a while, he's going to stop. He's going to stop, and he cannot pull you to the field. And spend the rest of the day here, enjoy, eat your meat, feast." So the farmer is listening to the conversation. And then he said, "This is great." With that knowledge, he said, "Let me teach them a lesson." The next morning, he came and he started pulling and pushing the ox and kicking the ox. And the ox doesn't move. And I said, "Oh my God, the poor ox, I think my ox is getting sick. But I needed an animal for the field, so he decided to take the donkey. So he's giving a lesson to the donkey. So he took the donkey to the field. Ox really enjoyed his day there without working, and the donkey went to the field and worked all day since, I mean, starting from early morning until late at night. He came back and he said, "This is it, this is it." Next morning, you cannot fool the farmer. You're going to the field. I'm staying here. And then ox said, no, I enjoy this. I have been working for so many years now. It is your turn. But the donkey says that, you know what? When I went to the field, the other farmers asked about you. You know what he said, the farmer? The farmer said that my ox is very sick. And then they advised him to send you to the butcher because he won't be able to get anything out of you. Kind of, he scared the ox very much. So the next morning, ox immediately got prepared, you know, rushed to the field. In the meantime, the man who learned the language of the animals is extremely happy. Now look at this. I'm really controlling everything. He's very happy, and he thinks that he can really benefit from this a lot. So the next morning, again, when he was walking to his barn, now he realized that there's another conversation going on between the rooster and the dog. And the rooster says that, you know what, tomorrow you're going to have a great feast to the dog. And the dog says, how come? Well, tomorrow the ox is going to die. And when the ox dies, he says, they're going to skin the ox, and there's going to be a lot of meaty bones for you. Dog is very happy. As soon as the man hears this, the farmer hears this, immediately he takes the ox, brings to the ox to the farm marketplace, and then sells the ox. So the next morning, there's no feast because the ox is gone. Dog is very upset. And he's arguing. The next morning when he comes to the barn, he hears that dog is arguing with the rooster. "You are a liar," he says, "that you're sitting on your perch and then fabricating these lies. I didn't get a piece of meat. You kept convincing me that there's going to be a feast for me." "Don't worry," he says, "don't worry. The next day, the slave is going to die. When the slave dies, all the neighborhood and everybody is going to come to the funeral. There's going to be a lot of food for you." The man hears that. The next morning, he sells his slave. Well, that comes the third day. Dog is very upset. And a rooster, "I am innocent," he said. "All what I have said was correct. What is happening is that as soon as the man sells the sick ox, the slave, you don't get anything. But don't worry," he says. "There's nothing to worry about. You will get your feast. You will get your feast for sure, because tomorrow the farmer is going to die." So the man has been hearing all these things and preparing himself for the next thing. All of a sudden, shock. He didn't know what to do. He cannot sell himself. He cannot get rid of himself. There's no way that he can avoid this. He's going to die the next day. He rushed to Moses and he said, "Can you turn things around? I don't want to die." He said that death is going to be a punishment for you because you seek safety and prosperity at the price of other people's misfortunes. So this story brings in our minds to the question of one of the most precious gift Allah Ta'ala give us. You know, we were given, we are decorated with a lot of gifts as human beings, as His supreme creation. But what do you think
the most valuable gift Allah Ta'ala gave us? Really, what do you think? The vision, ability to hear, act. As far as we are concerned, the most valuable gift Allah Ta'ala gave us is the power of choosing our actions. The power of choosing our actions, which we call this, what do we call this?
Free will.
The will. It's interesting. Allah Ta'ala gave us this will. He didn't even give this to the angels. We were given this will. And then we have this power. We have this power. And actually, this is one of the most valuable, at the same time, one of the most dangerous gift we have received from Allah Ta'ala. We, with this gift, we satisfy our desires. We take actions. And every time we take an action, there's a consequence. Sometimes we take an action, something good happens. Sometimes we take an action, and a misery comes. With a lot of consequences as a result of these actions. Common men like us, have the tendency to think that if anything good happens, it happens because we made the right decision. We are so intelligent, we are so smart, that good happened because of us. This is how common men think. And then whenever bad happens, there's always someone to blame. To the extent that sometimes we blame God, Allah Ta'ala, Astaghfirullahul Azim, for the things that go wrong. If you don't remember anything, what I said tonight, just remember this one. The truth is that when you exercise your will, when you do something, if you do it under the influences of your ego, without considering anything but yourself, selfishly, if you exercise your will under the influence of your ego, you are going to create a condition, situation, and that situation, the situation that you prepared, is going to be a magnet for all the miseries, adversities. You're going to attract adversities if you exercise your will under the influence of your ego. Underline this. If you remember this alone, that's sufficient for tonight. But we're going to talk more. This is the most important information that we know about what we can get when we exercise this will. This particular story is interesting because it is really a beautiful example of how the will, I mean, the more the power you are given, the more there is this tendency to use this power for your own self-interest, which creates is the wrong word. We don't have any power to create anything. We prepare a condition, and that condition attracts misery. As an example, spring is coming. If you prepare your field, your garden, if you clean the soil, weed it, plant seed, you prepare a condition. And from this condition, beautiful flowers will come out. Flowers will be created by Allah Ta'ala. You will prepare the condition. You don't create anything, you prepare the condition. Your actions, which are you are free to choose your actions are going to prepare the condition Allah Ta'ala creates out of that condition situation. But you can go home, carelessly you can actually turn on your gas range, and then all of a sudden there's gas in the air. You prepare the condition now for explosion. Somebody comes and lights up the candle, it explodes. Allah Ta'ala creates the explosion, but you prepare that condition. That's the misery. That's the misery part. This, actually, early very early in the history of Islam, early Muslims learned this very early. In the Battle of Uhud. Battle of Uhud is very important because Muslims were fighting against an enemy. Enemy is really attacking, and the only purpose is to exterminate the early Muslims, and they are defending themselves. They are fighting against an enemy much larger than the army, and they are about to win. They were a step away from a decisive victory. Something terrible happens. And many who knows a little bit about the history would know that the archers left their positions against the advisors of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He said that do not move, stay here. Against his advices, the archers left their positions. When they left their positions, the armies of the enemy surrounded the Muslims, and as a result, as a consequence, many Muslims died. Not only that, even Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam badly injured. Kind of Muslims were shaken afterwards. Very much shaken. So look at this. There's the archers. They are given the power. They are given the power of choosing what to do. Although they know what is right, what is wrong, although they are given the advice from the Messenger of Allah, they made a decision. And as a consequence of that decision, something terrible happened. When Muslims were very much shaken, Allah Ta'ala sent them a verse. Let me read that verse because it's beautiful. So basically, they ask why they had been defeated, even though they had fought for the sake of Islam. Why they had been defeated, even Rasulullah was fighting with them. This is a very difficult question at the time. You know, we sacrifice everything and fighting for the sake of Allah Ta'ala, why Allah Ta'ala is not helping us here? Don't think that these are historical questions. You ask these questions every day. The questions that you come with to me to answer is actually full of these questions. So Allah Ta'ala send them this verse. When a disaster has befallen you after you had inflicted twice as much on your enemies. When you were about to win this battle, a step away from a decisive victory, a disaster has befallen on you. Do you say, how has this come about? Say, it has come from your own selves. So the bottom line is, there's an ayat. Allah Ta'ala actually teaches us with examples, but there's a very clear ayat. And in that ayat, Allah Ta'ala says, clearly says that whenever good happens, it is from me. Whenever bad happens, know that it is from your own selves. So Uhud was an excellent example to teach early Muslims that whenever bad happens, it's going to be from, because they were not able to use the will that was entrusted to them to serve, but for their personal benefits. Why did the archers left the positions? Children?
For what? Booty battles.
Right. They saw that though they won the war and everybody was running for the war booties, and they said, oh, we were left behind. But they were actually given a set of instructions that they should not. Regardless. However, this is one part of the story, that if you exercise your will, which is entrusted to you as the supreme creation of Allah Ta'ala, under the influence of your ego, you're going to prepare a condition. You're going to be a magnet for misery. But Allah Ta'ala at the same time says that whenever good happens, it is from me. And in the battle of Badr, actually, a beautiful example of this is given as well. Imagine an army, they stood face to face, they are about to charge. Compared to the armies of the Muslims, 10 times maybe more. Right before the war, Rasulullah took a handful of sand and threw at the face of this huge army, the army of enemies. That handful of sand blinded them and they won the battle. After they won the battle, what was the verse they received? Here is. It was not you. Now Allah Ta'ala is speaking to Rasulullah. It was not you when you threw the sand at them. It was Allah who threw it. So this is a very difficult, actually. This is one of the very difficult concepts to digest. Allah Ta'ala gave us this the power of choice, and we have this power to exercise our will, desires. And then how do you exercise your desire? You exercise your will whenever you like to do something, you do it. Whenever you don't like to do something, you don't do it. This is how we exercise our wills. This is the way we exercise our will. And Allah Ta'ala is giving an incredible force, and you use this force to do something that you like, and you don't use that force when it comes to do things that you don't like. And he warns. Now, this is the power. This is the magic wand. Harry Potter. Here's the banner. Magic wand. I give it to you. And then he says that, see, this is the, remember the way we exercise our will. Remember the way we exercise our will. And look at this warning. Perhaps you hate a thing, and it is good for you. And perhaps you love a thing, and it is bad for you. Only Allah knows, while you know not. Now here comes a legitimate question. I mean, it is my question. Probably you also asked the same question. Obviously, we don't know how to use this will. Do we? Obviously, we don't. Not only we don't, Allah Ta'ala actually warns us. Here is the will. But I know that you won't be able to use it. And there comes the question. Why Allah Ta'ala gave us this power when he knew that we didn't know how to use it? It's a legitimate question, isn't it? Why do we have this will in the first place when we... I mean, imagine Allah Ta'ala gave you a car which you don't know how to drive. Think about your children. Think about how impulsively they react. So to be able to actually... there is your will, and there is Allah Ta'ala's greater will. Obviously, your will cannot oppose His will, right? I mean, do you think that your will is going to be stronger than His will? If He doesn't want, your will is nothing. Just to be able to understand this, think about your children, and when they are small, in particular when they are small, there is your will. And there is their will. And when they are small, usually your will is actually greater than their will. That is, you can actually control their will at a certain level. That is, they often want to jump off the table. You stop them because your will is greater. They want to play with the matches. You stop them because they're going to burn themselves or the house. Your will is great. You're more powerful. You hold their hand because you know that as soon as you let them, you're going to run and hurt themselves. Kind of, they look at it as a tyranny most of the time. You know, you hold their hand, You know that if you let them go, they're going to run and fall. But sometimes, don't we? I myself did. Sometimes, you know, you let them go. You let them go because you want them to see the consequences, otherwise they won't be able to learn. The only way you appreciate the greater will of your owner is to exercise it and see how bad you use it. To be able to appreciate his divinity, to be able to appreciate his greater will, it is essential that we have to use the tool that is given to us, just to be able to compare, just to be able to appreciate his greater will. I mean, this is our really very much like in our relationship with our children, you know. So we let them go. They cry and let me go, let me run. It's kind of, you feel that you're tyrannizing your children. You let them go. They fall. What happens when they fall? Where do they seek comfort? You're not really approving, but you let them do. Every time you exercise your will, you attract misery. That doesn't mean that Allah Ta'ala approves of your mistakes. It means that Allah Ta'ala wants to teach you something. How are you going to learn? By attracting misery, sometimes. As soon as they fall, I'm talking about children, they come back crying, seeking comfort in us, and appreciate us better, because they kind of know that, they understand that if they follow, they will get hurt less. Kind of you establish this connection with them. And then finally, you know, when I think about all these things, I always think about my own son when he was very young. And I miss those days, but he was really very active. He wanted to run. And then he had this incredible notion that he said that, Baba, let me go. I'm going to show how fast my shoes are running. How fast my shoes are running. He never attributed his speed to himself. But anyway, and then after a while, you really want him to show what he has. And then he falls, he cries, he comes back. And years pass. Of course, now I don't have the same power, right? We are almost equal. He has his own life, and I have mine. I cannot control as much as I was controlling him then. But it's very interesting. When he comes with a problem and a question, we are at a point that I don't say him that do this or don't do that. I say, if you do that, these are the consequences. These are the pros and cons of the second solution. This is the third one. Yet, we have another solution. You know what he says? I mean, this is the most beautiful part, which I feel I did something right. He comes and says, what would you do? That is an indication of trust that we should establish between ourselves and God. The meaning of it is actually, this is exactly what we should do, he is submitting his will. Can you submit your will in front of God's greater will? After all these experiences when keep bumping your head from one wall to another, can you stop and say that I don't want it anymore? If you can submit your will to the greater will of Allah Ta'ala, that's called teslimiyyah. That is becoming Muslim. That is finding the peace and comfort. That is Islam. If you can do that. And then once you do that, this is the beauty is, once you do that, which means that, so imagine, you come and say, oh, I know I have lots of things to do. I have lots of power. I can do many different things here. I can do this. I can steal this. I can step over that. I can, jump over the table. I can jump over the hill. I can do many things. And turn back all these options. Turn your face to God and say that I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to do whatever you would do. However you would conduct yourself let me conduct myself however you would conduct yourself under the same situation. Meaning that you are actually dropping the will and then assuming his qualities. When you come to this level of submission, now he gives you the power and your tongue becomes his tongue. Your hands become his hands. The feet with which you walk becomes his feet. Because you're not doing anything. You're actually, I don't want my feet, I don't want my tongue. Speak. Hold for me. Show me what is the best way of doing it. So this actually, when you think about this, is really, I think this is a very heavy subject. And when you think about it, some kind of, when you actually compare and contrast all these verses, you come to the conclusion that, is it true? Should we think that whenever something bad happens, it is always our fault? No. Do not presume that something, whenever something bad happens, or whenever something happens which looks bad, it is a punishment. Don't think like that. You're dealing with, you are in front of the most merciful, most compassionate. He is there to teach you to become a better human being. This is his desire. He is not there to punish. Whenever something happens which looks like bad, it actually, know it in mind, and believe it in your heart, that whatever that thing is, it's better for you. If Allah didn't give you that big house, or that nice car, or you didn't get the big raise that you were hoping for, know that it's good for you. Believe that it is good for you. And then there's another beautiful hadith that comes to support this, that which I'm going to read this because I don't want to lose the meaning of it. And Rasulullah says that as a result of these difficulties, sometimes it comes, we don't understand, it looks like a terrible thing. It looks like a misery, sometimes. But when you, if you can show patience, and I don't like this, I don't like this, I cannot understand why it happened to me, why now? If you cannot answer those questions, you may not be able to answer those questions most of the time. Think, submit yourself patiently. Patience is the key here, and Allah Ta'ala, through Rasulullah, says that. There is nothing that befalls a believer. Not even a thorn that pricks them. But Allah will record one good deed for him and will remove one bad deed from him. So if you're suffering, feel the joy because you are receiving a lot of good deeds if you are patient. If you are suffering, feel the joy because Allah Ta'ala, if you are patient, is removing a lot of bad deeds from you. Celebrate. Salaam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salaam.
Who wanted to know the language of the animals? You still want to know?
So it started flickering, and then it's dead, and then it's flickering, and then it's dead. Then live stream just went away. Shut down. Right, get away.
What's
the iPod that I'm taking. Maybe it is updated. I don't know. I'll hold your fingertips tonight.
Good job. Are you offering?
Remember.
Are you offering something? Sure. Problem is related to your life, you cannot be objective. Here's the problem. That's why in this tariqa there is this teacher-student relation. When you come to someone you trust, you're actually transferring that problem. So when it is your problem, that problem is tainted with a lot of self-interest. Because it's your problem, you have lots of desires. There is the pressure from ego. There's something that you want to do. There is the desire to get recognized. You know, all selfish things are making it difficult to find a clean solution. Being aware of that is the great thing. So when you actually transfer that problem to someone. I mean, that's the second person who loves you, that person who really cares for you, and only thing that he wants is your salvation and your well-being. That problem, no matter how he decides, that the solution is going to be better than the solution that I would generate, because the solution will not be tainted or influenced by ego. Basically, by transferring that problem, this is the really the beauty. By transferring that problem from himself to yourself, he's actually detaching his ego, and he's letting you. No matter what decision you make, is gonna be good for him because you love him, because you don't want anything bad happens to him. Your sincere efforts is better than any effort that he would make. Even your effort to try to come up with a solution is good enough. Of course, this is, I think the most difficult part is, I mean, I understand, as a father, I understand the concern. You're not able to detach yourself from the problem either. When this problem becomes your problem. Then all of a sudden, then there comes, I mean, this is the same vicious cycle that you're putting yourself into. You know, take your step, you have to take your step away, yourself away from the problem. What is it that I should do so that he benefits from it? Even if I lose. This is really the teachers, the fathers. I mean, even if it is at my loss, what is the solution? Because you're not in the picture. There's no... The solution is not tainted by ego. Ahmed?
Is it possible that what Allah wants from us in a situation and what He does Himself in that situation will be different? For example, Allah is very powerful, He's all powerful, but He wants us to be modest. So, are they always the same or something? It's possible that they're different.
What Allah Ta'ala wants us to do, as opposed to what he lets us to do.
No, what he would do.
There could be some circumstances that ultimately it's all about your becoming a better human being. On the way to become a better human being, no matter at what station you are, you will have certain attachments. So basically, what I'm trying to say is that you cannot really ultimately compare yourself with him, because no matter what your station is, no matter what your situation is, you will have certain weaknesses that needs to be cleansed. In the real life conditions, Allah Ta'ala will address all those things, no matter where you are. You could be at the level of nafs ammara, nafs mulhima, mutma'in, even rida, doesn't matter. You will have certain shortcomings, and then Allah Ta'ala will put you in a situation that sometimes show you who you are in terms of how you are reacting to that one. I mean, ultimately, the aim here is that you're really lifting you up to a higher level. So wherever you are, you will have some certain shortcomings. Every problem is going to be a mirror for you, so that you see what is your shortcoming.
Assalamu alaikum, Baba.
Alaikum salam.
Speaking about the will, and the greatest will, which is Allah's will, there is three category of people that most don't want to give up their will to Allah's will, which are the king, the rich people, and the knowledgeable people. I'm talking about the scientists who sometimes compare their power like they know best.
Let me stop you. You cannot really categorize the people who are not willing to submit their wills as rich scientists and knowledgeable people. Because among those, we know in this, I can give you a lot of examples of those scientists, knowledgeable people. Waliullah, both scientists and knowledgeable people, and many rich Abdul Qadir Geylani Kuddusi Serayi was rich, wealthy. You could not even imagine. The story of the Ibn Arabi who is going to Andalusia, his shaykh, incredible one. The key there is that it's not about the wealth. They were not attached to that wealth. It didn't matter to them. So it's not about being knowledgeable. It's about not being able to apply that knowledge to your lives. It's not about wealth, it's about to become the slave. See, we are created as servant. Allah Ta'ala created us as servant. So we are this, when you open yourself up and look at your blueprint, you are nothing but a slave. You're designed like that. There's only one thing you can do. You cannot change that. You cannot change the fact that you are a servant, you are a slave. You cannot change this, by the way. But you can change one thing. You can select your master. Select a good master for yourself. Don't let Wall Street become your master. Don't select gold becomes your master. Select the master who is most compassionate and most merciful. Really, that's the bottom line. We will not be able to change our nature. We are created with these qualities so that we can see the truth. But there are there are lots of beautiful scientists, there are lots of beautiful knowledgeable persons and rich ones. And there are very, very, very stubborn poor people, ignorant people, and people who did not have any education. I am actually afraid of them more than afraid of scientists. At least scientists has the knowledge, can see things. Like Mehmet was saying, right? It's kind of incredible sometimes to think that when you go into the details of the science and see how complex and how beautifully organized the everything is, thinking that everything is actually created accidentally is something unbelievable.
Talked about staying relaxed and conscious. How do we build on that or try to grow in that respect?
Stay in conscious, right?
Conscious and relaxed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, conscious really is being heedful. Really, we are unconscious in a state of sleep when we forget our prime responsibility here. Associate that with whenever you forget that you are brought to here as His supreme creation. Every time anything that you do make you forget God is also making you unconscious. Consciousness is really about being aware of your Creator at every aspect of your life, remembering Him all the time. So we are talking about the zikr, remembering. Even the word remembering is an indication that we forget all the time. Why do we try to remember? Because we forget. The moment you forget, that moment is actually, you can think of it as that you're like sleeping, walking like a sleeping person. You are not conscious of your responsibility. Fundamentally, the purpose we are here is to witness. You are a witness. Witness what? We are witness here. We are sent here to witness his beautiful attributes. He was a hidden treasure. The hidden treasure revealed himself. All the divine treasures were opened and then were put in front of your eyes. And then looking at that treasure and not being aware that you are in front of a treasure is an indication that you're not conscious. Unconscious. You know, when somebody hit your head and then you faint, you're unconscious. When you're unconscious, you don't see. You are blind. Blind to what? Blind to the truth. You are blind to the beauties around you. When you look at, you do not see the truth behind it. When you look at, you just see the form and the shape and the shadows. But behind it, there is something which does not cast shadow. Behind it, there is something that exists eternally. There is something which is not temporal. To be able to see that is being conscious. So, with this definition, we are unconscious 99.9% of the time. I mean, the only time we are conscious is when we are sleeping. As soon as we wake up, we completely forget. As soon as we start complaining, we are unconscious. We are unconscious because we close our eyes to His divinity. As soon as you close your eyes, you don't see His beauty, eternity. All you are dealing with the dust of this earth, temporality. you're suffering with that temporality. You know, then you become unconscious. Like the pain on my neck made me unconscious today because I cannot think of anything but the pain. But there's a good reason for it. I'm sure there's a good reason for it. And I know it. I believe in it in my heart, but it makes me unconscious. You know, we cannot see. So we say remembering, we do zikr. Zikr, what we are doing is a celebration. You know, zikr is just a celebration. What are we celebrating? We are just celebrating the hope that from this jungle where we spend our lives, which we call life, where we spend most of our lives unconscious, there is a hope. There is a hope. We see that in this jungle there is a way out. We may be able to get back our consciousness. That hope is making us jump up and down and scream. That is zikr. It's a celebration. It's not a worship. It's just a celebration, and we do that celebration because we believe that there's a way out. There's a way out of this jungle as a human being. And because we see that light, that gives us an incredible joy. And showing that joy externally is called a ceremony, which we call it zikr. But true zikr is zikr daim. What is zikr? True zikr is really not being conscious of Him all the time. And this is only possible when you kind of always you come to Him and, oh God, what would you do? Kind of a thing. I'm submitting myself. Being aware that He is there watching you. Even if you don't see Him, being aware that He sees you. Really, it's once you open, momentarily we open our eyes. It happens. I'm hoping that on this path we will taste that. When you open your eyes, no matter what's happening around you, you kind of, with joy, mesmerize. It's awesome. Everything becomes so beautiful. So perfect harmony you see, no matter what. That is actually being conscious. That is peace. Knowing that somebody is out there controlling everything, not you. Even all the bad things that are happening around you, knowing that there's a purpose for everything. There's a bigger picture. I'm not saying that you don't get sad. Even in sadness you feel joy. But you don't complain. There's no rebellious action.
Can I ask a question though?
Sure.
I was having a conversation with somebody, just wondering about it. I guess to some of this, do the things really change in terms of? You know, they said that Romans, you know, controlled citizens with, you know, Colosseum and bread and wine. So it was their food and entertainment. And today we say, you know, the media makes it so much more harder to, you know, be conscious, or the food is, you know, polluted, or the air is polluted, so it makes it harder to be healthy. But in sort of grander scheme of things, does it? Is anything really has changed?
No.
None of that matters.
No matter where you are, under what circumstances you are in, what I'm trying to say is that His treasure is so vast, so big, that no matter where you are, you will be able to see incredible examples from His treasure. It does not matter who you are, where you are, under what condition you are, but you are going to find that light. That is being conscious. It doesn't matter. Sometimes you see people rich, wealthy, very comfortable, but they don't see anything. Sometimes people who are suffering sees better than those who are not. famous ayat. Remember me, I will remember you. We are talking about remembering him. I mean, we always, we constantly spend this life forgetting that there is God. So he says that, remember me so that I remember you. My question to you, how does God remember you? What does that mean? Did he forget us? Okay, we forget him. But did he forget us? How does he remember you? How does God remember? He says, remember me, I will remember you. How does God remember you? Figure this out. Figure this out, really.
Existence and maybe remembrance. For existence, we want to think either we exist or we don't exist, zero and one. But in reality, there might be multiple levels of existence. So Allah's existence is not same as our existence, so there might be a difference in terms of levels. And same thing might be true for will, as we give the example.
Wrong questions cannot have right answers. Once you start your question that his existence is different than my existence, everything collapses here. The roof came down now. There is no separation in reality. You cannot really start in reality separating yourself from his existence. Really, our existence, I have created you for myself. Our existence is actually including everything. Everything is from him. There isn't anything that is other than him. Everything is his reflection, including us, in particular us. We are the microcosm, not a microcosm, we are the macrocosm. So in our existence there is everything. His existence is hidden in us. And that's the treasure we are seeking. But coming back to when you give up your will for his greater will, when you conduct yourself with his qualities, when something good happens, if it happens through you, when you become the comforter for others, when you become the giving hand, when you become the caressing hand, when people are suffering, if you are there to soothe their pain, then he remembers you. When he remembers you, he selects you. You become his hand with which he holds. You become his tongue with which he speaks. That's how you are remembered. Remember me, meaning that remember that I am your God, remember that I am there to take care of you, give up that thing that I gave you, then I remember you. Of course, he's always aware of us. Remembering me, now I'll take him, now I'm going to be, you're going to be my, really you're going to be my vice chairman. Now you're my supreme creation. Now you walk, I'll be with you. Speak, you cannot make a mistake.
So, Baba, what level would that be? In the level of ordinary people,
why are you curious?
We have to know hope.
Curiosity question. Curiosity kills the cat. Wow. See, there's at every level we go up and down. You can taste all these things. There's really not one level in this, in the progress, on the path of progress. There are really
no matter where you are, there are certain instances that you are given the taste of what it means to be there. And actually, this is—it's the light we are following. That's the light we are, you know, celebrating the joy.
You said something just now. I didn't get it. Allah say, "Give up the things that I gave you, and I remember you."
I remember.
Give up the things that I give to you, and I remember you.
Remember me and I will remember you. And what I'm saying is that Allah remembers you. One interpretation of it is that when Allah Ta'ala use you as His agent to give comfort to people, then He remembers you, is one interpretation of it. Remember me. It's an honor, right?
Yeah.
Being remembered by Allah Ta'ala is an honor. How you are being remembered is as you remember God, when you remember Him as your supreme creator, when you remember Allah Ta'ala, you're actually remembering Him as the all-powerful sustainer of everything. When you glorify Him, He glorifies you. Glorifying, being glorified is being given His divine power to your faculties. That is how you get remembered.
So if you forget to remember?
If you forget Him, you do not get your faculties enlightened by His divinity. This is closing your hands to the truth, right? It's as simple as that.
What about another word? The remembrance can come in different ways. Like people who they do good deeds in an anonymous way. They get a reward from that because Allah knows they're remembering, but they don't show it to people, they don't expose it to people.
Yeah.
We compare that as a way of remembrance.
Yeah, again, you know, it's not about an action, it's about intentions. You know, if your intention is to get recognition, if your intention is to be known by the action, then you only get that one. You get what you want. If you are remembered by Allah Ta'ala, meaning that if you conduct yourself with His beautiful attributes, then nothing matters. I mean, even if they insult at you, even if you're not appreciated, it doesn't matter. You won't even realize, you won't even feel you are helping people. You won't even feel that you're contributing. It doesn't matter. It's just being his vice president, acting on the face of earth for His sake. The will is tricky. This is very tricky. Having the will is very tricky.
So submission, submission is a challenge because the reality is really does not coincide with your expectation, basically.
Yes.
So I guess maybe, I mean, the way to approach it would be to not have expectations, or basically you coincide your expectations with everything that happens.
You will have some preferences in life. That's actually. That's going to be your motivation to do one thing or another. It's not about not having expectations. The way to actually understand this is you should really not have unbounded ambition, so that you kind of try to get what you want at the price of, you know, destroying other people's lives. You know, that is the level. You will have certain preferences, you will act. As a result of you're going to be faced with a consequence. Take that consequence. Accept that. Do not blame anyone. In particular, do not blame Allah Ta'ala if things don't go the way you expect. Until you act, it's inevitable. I mean, without expectation, without any desire. This is why we have the desires, so that we can move, we can act. You know, I had the desire and I drink this cup of tea. You know,
But this cup of tea, this desire of me, made Ken and Masroor in the tea kitchen prepare this tea. My desire, my lower self's desire to drink tea, enabled them to serve these people. I'm just trying to present you a case that there are incredible relations and connections. So we will have desires. Allah Ta'ala used my desire to generate the circumstances. Circumstances for you, maybe to serve. Circumstances for him, maybe to sin. But there's this bigger picture. So we will act. We will have ambitions.
So I guess the question is then, so the outcome of course is not determined by you, right? So because it will always, whatever happens.
No.
So is it submitting to the outcome no matter what?
Accepting the outcome as, and then taking the next action.
Yeah.
Accepting means not giving up. That is the definition of being patient. Sometimes you act upon it; it doesn't work. Maybe you have to do more. So you actually take an examination and then you fail. This is destined. I am destined to fail. I'm not going to study anymore. I'm not talking about this. You are going to take the next, I fail because I did not study enough. Take the next action, study more.
How do you discern though between, it's obviously a little more challenging because your ego is at play, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you know whether what Allah wills at that point? So let's say I'm not discerned to...
Yeah, I know very well. This question, so this is a very basic question that we try to answer in many forms and ways, but Tosun Baba keeps giving the example of this German woman. Remember this famous German woman who approaches the Muzaffar Effendi and then asks, this is the question. I'm doing something, I'm making a decision, I'm going to do this, what is the right thing? Am I going to read the Quran? I'm going to read the Hadith? Good thing if you can read the Quran and see some evidences, examples, good for you, but it's almost impossible. There are reasons. I mean, the meaning of the Quran cannot finish. If the forest is the pen, the ocean is the ink, and the skies are the papers, the meaning will not finish. So, the Hadith, there's the Hadith, and if you can follow. And then there is the nefs, the German woman is always complaining about, arguing that his nefs is always going to be in the middle between the right decision and what is the truth. How are you going to handle that? So there is this very famous, Baba keeps teaching us, we just cannot learn it, that you think about the result, possible, potential, try to predict the potential consequence of that action. Is it going to benefit you and not benefit others? Don't do that. Because this is a clear indication that your ego is asking for it. Is it going to benefit you and also at the same time benefit others? As a result of this your whoever surrounds you, everybody is benefiting, and do it. I'm going to do something, but I'm going to lose a lot. But I know that people around me are going to benefit. Bless you. Bless you if you can do that. But this is really the fundamental principle of how to make a decision if you can. And most of the time, we will not be able to make the correct decision because we are going to justify, our intelligence is going to be in the middle and justify the wrong action. Even that is not going to, even this set of principles are not going to help you most of the time because you are going to use your intelligence to fabricate justification for you so that you do the wrong thing. It may present a situation that if you do this, everybody is going to benefit, although you know very well that it's going to destroy everyone. You will see examples of it in your life, that your decision, you kind of fool yourself that I'm doing it for others. But it's you're really doing it for yourself.
Okay.
the evil quality is actually forcing you. Either your arrogance, your envy, the feeling of revenge is making you act. But you, as a result of that action, I'm not doing this for myself. I'm doing it for others. So basically, so ultimately, no matter what, there is no pill. Ultimately, unless you achieve sincerity, none of these medication will be digested by your system. You are gonna drink the pill and then relieve the pill. Nothing is gonna be digested unless there is sincerity. You have to have sincerity.
What do you say? You have to get the full benefit of Allah. You have to be a full-time Muslim, not a part-time.
Yeah, full-time Muslim. My understanding of full-time Muslim is the one who never forgets Allah Ta'ala. Many people's understanding of full-time Muslims is really spending their lives in a mosque or in a temple or contemplating in a cave, doing nothing. Full-time Muslim is really full-time aware of the treasure that they are sent to witness. Ashhadu. What does Ashhadu mean? The first thing we are going to ask, if somebody wants to become a Muslim, the first thing we are going to say Ashhadu. What is Ashhadu? Anybody knows?
I witness.
Ashhadu Shahada. Shahid. What does Shahid means?
A witness.
I am a witness. So the first thing that we are asking from people when they become a Muslim, declare, I am a witness. I am a witness. That's what we want from the first thing that we want. Become a witness. How are you going to become a witness if you are blind? How are you going to become a witness if you are a slave of your ego? I am going to be a witness, and I'm going to witness that there's no God but Allah. Oh yeah.
But doesn't the definition sort of depend on the level of certainty? On one level, you could say, I witness, as in I witness, I'm pronouncing the testimony, but when said with sincerity, then you quite literally testify. It's sort of testify.
Yeah, we you know, all these things we are kind of, you know, that we are copying, we're imitating. This is the way we are actually saying that this is what you should be doing. You are honored now. All of a sudden, you are honored now. I mean, Allah Ta'ala is honoring you and selecting you to become a witness. To become a witness of His treasure. Witness that there's no God but Him. Witness His treasure. So you are now honored. You're not like other people. You're different. You're a witness now. You have the qualities to become a witness. So that is extremely important honor. As soon as you become a witness, your status is raised. Your sins are forgiven, because now you are a different person. Your status is raised to become a witness. Can we sustain it throughout our lives? I don't know, but we are trying. We start with that. It's between you and Allah Ta'ala. I cannot judge. That's why whenever someone says Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah Muhammadan Rasulullah, nobody can judge her or him. He is or she is as good a Muslim as you are. You cannot judge that. But it's between you and God. From this point on, it's between you and Allah Ta'ala. How sincere you are is going to be judged by Him.
Can I ask you a follow-up question about sincerity? So we talk about sincerity like that's something we want to do, but it also sort of seems like sincerity is almost like a desired result of our actions,
a desired
result. Like sincerity is nothing you could it's not necessarily something you could acquire, right? I mean, nothing you could will into existence and wish, oh, I want to be sincere and become sincere, but rather it's like we have submission.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's easy, very easy. I mean, we know, I think this model is well studied. I mean, the model of sincerity is well studied. We know it very well. There is actually, we don't have any doubt about the meaning of what sincerity means. It's just that implementing that, we understand that. I mean, it's an animal, we understand that. We kind of investigated that. We analyzed, we probed into it. We know everything about it. Implementing, creating a sincere person is a difficult thing. Ultimately, it's all about, you know, mismatching between your intentions and your actions. Actions is what I see. You just care for that. That's what makes you insincere. Because what makes you visible is your actions, what you say, how you walk, what you even what you do, even what you think, all what you're reflecting externally is what you care most, because it is visible. Your externally visible self is becoming so important that you're kind of deviating from the true intentions of why you should do something. If there is a inconsistency between your inner self and how you would like to be seen and recognized by others, that is insincerity. That is insincerity right there. And you will see this incredibly in your life every moment. The moment you become, it's a load, it's an incredible burden. It makes you tired, it makes you exhausted. Imagine that you have an intention, your inner engine is running with an intention, with a purpose, and your external is doing something else. I don't know how it is energy consuming. I mean, you are destroying yourselves with insincerity. You are getting old with insincerity. As soon as you match your intentions with your actions, you start flying.
I mean, somebody could be sincerely delusional, right? I mean,
right. You can be a sincere thief. You know, I'm the best robber in this world, and you go and rob
like
a bank. You're a sincere. You can be a sincere adulteress. You can be a sincere thief. I'm not talking about. We are talking about when we talk about sincere. We are talking about doing things for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. Doing things for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. In this context, sincerity is defined. If you are doing, your actions is for the sake of others. If your actions is to get recognition or personal benefit, that is going to deviate you from insincerity.
But is that something that is always under our control?
Yeah, that's why you have to be awake. You have to be.
That's like a definition of.
That's why you should be always remembering. That's why you should not forget who your Lord is. Usually always you feel this burden. It could be a presentation. It could be a driving. It could be a telephone conversation. It could be anything. You feel this pressure that somebody. I mean, the life becomes unbearable. Because why? Because you're trying to present a personality which is not there. Which is not there. You're making up a personality. You're playing a role which doesn't exist. That is very difficult. That's extremely difficult.
So, I mean, I'm thinking of a verse, you know, it says, the desert Arabs say we believe. And says, say to them that don't say we believe, say we submit, because the faith hasn't entered your heart yet.
Right.
That sort of talking about the same
right.
thing. I mean, they're saying we believe, and they sort of
right.
want to say it, but they're said you're not required to believe. You're
right.
required to submit and
right.
follow the
right.
Whatever
right.
falls with that. And
that's
then
true.
Hopefully you'll be
absolutely.
Given all the sincerity.
Absolutely. Also, what you should not, sincerity does not mean to act shamelessly. You know, sometimes you say that you have an intention, for the sake of being insincere, you don't do things shamelessly. Kind of, you imitating the people who have the morals is actually trying to educate your inner self and intentions to become a better person. That's not, you're not there yet, but there's an effort to beautify your manners. Imitation is not imitation for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. Imitating Veliullah, imitating the people who have the manners, is not in the category of insincerity. Insincerity is doing something for other people's sake so that you can get personal benefit. As simple as this. And then you can find those several hundred examples in your life a day.
As Baba said, Adam, if you're giving somebody, you're doing something sincere.
Nasılsınız, hoş geldiniz. I'm sorry, Şakir. Ne güzelsin gördüm.
Bir şey sormak istiyorum.
İngilizce anlıyor musunuz? İngilizce.
İngilizce tam anlayamıyorum. Türkçe.
Türkçe tabii.
Ben Allah'cığım Mansur'la ilgili bir şey sormak istiyorum. Zamanında Allah'cığım Mansur Genel Hak fikrinden dolayı idam dediği herhalde öldürüldü. Onun fikirlerinin bugünün mutasavvıflarınca günümüzde yani bir Mevlana'nın değerlendirdiği gibi bir değerlendirme soruyordu. Bir kafamı takılıyordu.
Tabi. Türkçe sorunuz, Türkçe cevap vermek lazım şimdi. I apologize, I have to answer this in Turkish. Because I was asked the question in Turkish. Şimdi Hallacı Mansur'un Enel Hak demesi aslında onun Allah'a ne kadar yakın olduğunun bir işareti. Yalnız bazı sırlar var ki bunların ifşası yasak. Aslında hikaye çok uzun. Yani Allah'cı Mansur'a Enel Hak dedirten mevzu biraz daha geriye gidiyor. Yani bir vecd anında Allah'cı Mansur hakikat, o hakikatin sarhoşluğu içinde bir şey söylüyor. Öyle bir şey söylüyor ki o söylediği şey aslında o söylediği şeyin etkisi kendisine Enel Hak dedirtecek şekilde ileriye gidiyor. Şöyle bir hal oluyor. Peygamber Efendimiz Miraç'tayken, Allah-u Teala'nın karşısındayken, Peygamber Efendimiz'i Allah-u Teala selam ve salavatla karşılayınca Peygamber Efendimiz diyor ki, bu güzel salavatı salih kullarına da lütfen götüreyim diyor. Yani yalnız benim olmasın. Baba geçen gün bahsediyordu. Etteyyatü lillahi ve selavatü ve taibat deyince yani bütün güzellikler senindir ya Rabbim diye karşılar. Bir gördüğüm, bildiğimiz güzellik diye bildiğim ne varsa hepsi sana ait diyor Peygamber Efendimiz. Allah'tan da cevap geliyor. Bu güzelliklerin hepsi senin olsun diye selam ve salavat getiriyor. Yalnız benim olmasın diyor. Salih kulların da olsun diyor. Bu konu üzerine Hallacı Mansur diyor ki ben olsaydım diyor. Bir gaflet anı. Şimdi Hallacı Mansur'un gafleti böyle oluyor. Bizim gafletlerimiz başka. Hallacı Mansur'un gafleti böyle. O bir gaflet anında şöyle diyor. Ben olsaydım diyor. Yalnız salih kullarına değil. Bütün kullar için isterdim diyor. O zaman Peygamber Efendimiz rüyasında görüyor. Hallacı Mansur. Peygamber Efendimiz rüyasında diyor ki Hallacı sen diyor ki bu seviyedesin. Bunu çok daha iyi bilmen lazım. Yani alalade kullardan daha iyi bilmen lazım ki bizim söylediğimiz bizden değildir diyor. O yaptığım dua benden değildi diyor. Benim hiçbir sözüm benden değil. Benim ağzımdan çıkan şey benden değil. Allah'ın emriyle konuşurum ben diyor. Ama diyor bu yaptığının cezasını çekeceksin diyor manada. Sen de sana da söyletecekler diyor. Sana da senin iraden dışında söyletecekler diyor. Mana böyle mi diyor. İşte yıllar sonra Enel Hak, o bir gene vecd anında Enel Hak diyerek kendinden kendisi ben Tanrıyım demek istemiyor. Ama Allah'ın biraz önce söylediğimiz gibi ben Allah'ın eli kolu oldum. Yani benim ben kendi irademi isteklerimi terk ettim. Ben terk ettim abi. Ben benliğimi terk ettim. Ondan başka bende bir şey kalmadı diyor. Hatta sizin tanrınız ayağımın altında diyor. Ayağın altından da define çıkıyor. Fakat bunu anlamayan, yani ehli şeriata göre bunun anlaşılmaması, tabii ki bazı sırları bu şekilde açarsanız etraftan görenler farklı ve yanlış anlarlar. Şeriat polislik yapar. Yani daha doğrusu insanları küfre götürmemek için, çok ileri seviyedeki muhabbeti anlamayan insanların küfre gitmemesi için şeriat bazen çok fazla uzayan bu meyveleri, dalları toplar keser. Şeriat mahkemesi onu bu şekilde cezalandırıyor. Yani Enel Hak dediği için cezalandırıyor. Çünkü onun seviyesindeki söylediği şeyi normal Müslümanlar anlamaz. Küfre giderler. Şeriatın polisliği burada. Tasavvufi anlamda neden bu böyle oldu derseniz vecdanındaki gafletinden dolayı oldu. Diye de bize açıklıyorlar. Bildiğim kadarıyla. Bunlar sen İngilizce biliyor musun? İngilizce biliyor musun? Anlıyor musun konuştuklarını? Çok değil. Sen tercüme edersin. So let's do our night prayer, and there is zikr. What do you think? Thank you.